So for a household to have harmony, or for a work project to be successful, or for a community church event to make an impact, think we, not me. My next guest believes we should all be thinking collectively, and that it's that collective mindset that makes great leaders and ultimately builds strong communities. Studio 5 contributor Shima Boffman is joining me. You are going to stretch our brain today in the most beautiful way. How are you?
Oh, so
speaking
good.
Of beautiful, enter Shima. Enter Shima. So to understand the we, not me mindset better, maybe tell us, I'm going to work backward, tell us what it is not. What is a collective mindset? What isn't it?
What isn't it? Yes. So it's like, you know, when everyone works on a group project and somebody takes credit on social media or at work, or, you know, and doesn't give credit to all those around, or, you know, you go to a lunch and it's all about one person and not everyone else.
Not the group.
Yeah. And I was thinking even today I showed up and it's like, to get me here, I have a nanny who like is taking care of my baby. And, you know, do I recognize her? I actually was thinking on the ride over. I'm like, I'm editing a book right now. And have I ever thanked her in any of the books I've written? No. You know, it's just like remembering all the people that make what's possible possible. Mm-hmm. That we did this together. I truly could not be here without my nanny and without my husband and without, you know. And so it's like, do we take this collective we mindset, or is it just about me? And I put my name on the book.
You're right. It's a beautiful principle, and especially as you're going to apply it to leadership, like leadership in the home or otherwise, that good leaders adopt this. I flinch professionally, like majorly flinch when people say your show for that same reason, because I'm like, hold on, there are hundreds of people, dozens of people
working.
Well, no, it's just there is this, you know, we've got to broaden our way of thinking and recognize the group, the we.
Yes.
You have this awesome quote that will serve as sort of a jumping off point for this conversation. It's by the late chief rabbi of the UK, Lord Jonathan Sacks. He said, "The consumer society was laid down by the late Steve Jobs, coming down the mountain with two tablets, iPad 1, iPad 2, and the result is that we now have a culture of iPod, iPhone, iTunes, I. He goes on to say, when you're an individualist, egocentric culture, and you only care about I, you don't do terribly well.
Yes.
So summarize that quote for us, Shima.
I love it so much because, you know, you think of the iPhone, the I mean, he really just kind of nails society. It's this consumerism. He's just like, we're focused on the consumer, and that's I. It's how do I make myself prettier? How do I make myself richer? How do I do this for me? Rather than, what about us? What about society? What helps other people? And I think that shifting that, right, the ecocentric doesn't serve any of us. So you think it might be helping you, but it doesn't. And so if we're going to help everyone collectively, we need to kind of shift our mindset to for what he calls a covenant mindset. And this is, you know, it's interesting because, you know, in my religious background, you know, Christianity, it's like we talk about covenants a lot, but as they do in Judaism. And so one of the important things they have is this covenant thinking is, you know, they trace everything back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so for them, it's like, well, we all have this collective history. We're all one.
Mm-hmm.
And so how it plays out, and I love this story because it really helps me understand this we mindset is, so Rabbi Berman lost his father, and he talked about at a talk I was at, and he said, you know, it was difficult when I was traveling. So he would, because in order to respect his father, according to Jewish law, you have to pray three times a day and sanctify, you know, God's name in honor of the person that has passed.
His
beautiful,
father.
His father.
Yeah.
And so he would do this. And at home, it was easy. He'd go to Yeshiva University, you know, call nine students, and together they would pray. But he said he was traveling, and one time he ended up in Europe in some small town in the middle of nowhere. And he ended up, you know, reaching out to the synagogue. And, you know, 10 men showed up at midnight. And they brought him food. And they prayed together. And they didn't know him from anybody. Mm. They've never met him in his life. They probably won't ever even see him again. But the point was, it's like, they just saw this. Yes, we have a covenant relationship with our brother who is of our faith. And we're going to show up for him, even though we'll never see him again.
That's lovely.
You know? And even more dramatic, just barely this fall, with all the conflict going on with Hamas in Israel, you know, there's lots of fighting, lots of horrible deaths gone on there. But one particularly beautiful moment in this whole mess was there was a student from Brazil who went to one of the concerts that was bombed, and she was 24, had no family in Israel. She's from Brazil. And her family ends up to bury her, you know, in Israel as you know, that's where her body was. And they sent a message out saying, you know, can 10 people show up for her? Because we don't have any family in Israel. They just showed up to bury her. And, you know, thousands of people showed up.
Mm.
I mean, thousands. Yeah. And it's just like this beautiful solidarity, you know? Yeah. And this happens in all faiths, but I just noticed these examples. I just thought it was so beautiful.
Yeah, and that's a religious application, but think of living in that covenantal relationship yes. with those we're surrounding, those Absolutely. We're choosing to live next to,
yes.
serve with, that's work right. alongside. Like, what does that dynamic look like?
Yes.
You saw a real life application of this in one of your classes, I understand.
Oh, yes. So we have this situation where every year I give them this hypothetical, and we're talking about the theories of punishment in my criminal law class.
Okay.
And the students have to think about, you know, what do we do? So we pretend that they're on a desert island, somebody shoots someone else, they create the rule of law because they're law students, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. you know, they execute, they decide to have judges and make a trial, and basically they find this person is guilty of killing another classmate
okay.
of their class. And so I ask them, you know, what will you do? Do you effectuate the punishment there? So also they get rescued right at the end.
Okay.
Before they've executed.
All hypothetical, yes, but all, they are of course, plucked off yes. the island.
So they're about yes. to be plucked off the island. And then the question is, do they leave the person there to mm. suffer alone? Do they bring the person back for punishment? Do they execute him before they get on the plane? Or do they just not punish because
I imagine these law students are just spinning as you're throwing out
well,
these
and I've
ideas.
I've done this for 14 years. And uh-huh. so it's really interesting because every year the vast majority of students says, let's punish this
okay.
person, right? And either there or they take them home and punish.
Mm-hmm.
But this year was so fascinating, Brooke, because I had two students, Mr. Rich and Mr. Rich, both brothers, two brothers, a few years apart. And they're actual brothers in class.
Okay.
Right? And so I think at the moment, you know, as everyone's voting punished, I was like, Mr. Rich, you know, what if it was your brother
yeah.
that had killed?
Who happened to be sitting in the row behind him.
And he's like, I wouldn't punish him. And then I go to other Mr. Rich. I'm like, Mr. Rich, would you? And he's like, no way.
Mm.
And I was like, well, and this is at BYU. So I was like, you know what, Elder Soares said, we're all brothers and sisters in Jesus Christ. So what mm-hmm. do you think about that? This is for my, mm-hmm. Latter-day Saint audience. And they were all like, Oh
boy. Right? Can I change my answer, yeah. Professor Bachman? Yeah.
So I just think we don't often think that way yeah. in the secular context, right?
Yeah.
It's like we're talking about criminal law here, not yeah. no longer religion, but it matters everywhere.
Yeah, you know? That we mindset.
That we, yeah, we're That's all, there's no
really...
other. It's all of us. We're all brothers and sisters.
The president of Yeshiva University, Dr. Ari Berman, yeah. said this. You brought this quote to our attention as well that I want to hear your thoughts around. He said, from a consumer perspective, the past is history. You can learn from it. It might be interesting, but it's just events that occurred at a different time and place. From the covenantal perspective, the past is not history. It's memory.
Mm-hmm.
That is powerful.
It is so powerful. And I think, really, when you think about the past as important to your identity, which is where he goes with that thought, it's our identity traces back to, you know, the same father and mother, and we are all family.
Yeah.
And I think when you think of it that way, it's hard to see yourself as an individual I.
Yeah.
It is we, because you think of families, it's very
right.
much,
right.
it's easy to see your family as a we. It's not as easy to see your community as a we, but when we look back, it's like we all trace back
to the same beginning point, whatever
beginning,
that
yes,
was.
Right.
You've set the table so beautifully, so bring it forward to now for us. How can we do better about having this collective mindset in our homes, in our families, in our communities?
Yes, I think one way is expanding our definition of family, mm-hmm. right? Who is part of our family? I mean, can people that we minister to be our family? Could our neighbors be part of our family, right? Could even my kids sometimes get a little confused because I try to expand our vision of family so they don't know who their real cousins are and the ones that we've adopted.
My children have a similar conundrum.
Yeah.
Like we have four aunts that are not
yes,
our aunts,
yes,
but
it's,
yeah.
But it's auntie and mm-hmm. it's gonna, you know, but it's, yeah, we can all do that. I mean, I think worshiping whatever faith you have, you know, synagogue, going to church, going to mosque, that really helps you to have a community that you feel like a brothership, a sistership with,
yeah.
kinship. I think that helps, finding some service in the community. I mean, anything that we can do to expand it outside the I to the we
yeah.
is so helpful.
You have this really good rule of thumb, too, this tactile
yes.
way we can practice this. Punch that home. I love this so much.
Yes. Well, if it's a mistake, it's I.
Yeah.
And if it's something great, it's we.
<That's> like, I love it.
It's painful as a leader. Painful to accept, like, okay, yes, I'm sorry for this.
I love it. That's an I. A mistake is an I. A celebration is a we. I'm always going to think of you when I try to put that into practice, Shima. Thank
Good.
You so much.
Yes, of course.